Football Fix with Doug and Wolf. Presented by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, live from the Auction Community Studios.
Good morning, my brothers.
And you can see him on ESPN NFL Live weekdays, almost always at about 10:30 in the morning our time. Lewis Riddick has just called into the Coulter Automotive Group sports line. Soon to be the next, I don't know if he really wants me to say this, television turned general manager in the NFL. That will happen. Lewis, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing great, Lewis. Really appreciate your time here. The football universe moans and groans, Lewis, does it not? The game of football is changing, isn't it?
Yeah, man. It's a lot different than it was like back in the day when we played. And I don't even like to say back in the day, but
yep,
it's definitely a different game. It's a much more horizontal game. It's a much more, let's just say, less physically inclined game, meaning they're trying to take a lot of that out of it. I understand why. And it's a game of it's really a game of matchups, although it's always been. It's a game of one-on-one matchups because of the way you have to defend the field now. And, I mean, it's cool, though. I mean, we're all adapting to it. We all love it. It's still the most popular sport in this country, and I don't see why that'll change.
Feel free, Lewis, if we ever have a beer, to make fun of me for not having a life. But I heard every single word out of your mouth during the NFL draft coverage because I'm a nut. But I ask this even though I know the answer because fans want to know. When I say the Arizona Cardinals 2019 offseason, what do you say?
Yeah, I don't say anything. I think I might have like this kind of bewildered look on my face, and I'm a little puzzled, but I'm interested to see how it all plays itself out. All right. I mean, changing over coaching staffs that quickly, changing the most important position on the football team that quickly, making 180-degree departures from the way you had this organization headed to where you have it headed now. I mean, those are the kind of things that, that cause people to like raise an eyebrow and ask more questions instead of really having more answers. Now, it's a new year. There's always a lot of hope in the off season. Steve Keim and his staff have done a good job of acquiring some, on paper, very good football players. And we'll see if Cliff can make them into a good football team. They've had a solid draft. I mean, we all are excited to see just what Kyler looks like in this version of Cliff's offense. I mean, guys like Hakeem Butler, Andy Isabella, these are all guys that universally, you know, across the scouting community were people that that scouts liked and they valued and would want on their football team. Guys like Zach Allen, Byron Murphy, I mean, on the defensive side, these are all quality players. But, you know, acquiring talent is much different than building football teams, as we all know. And this is where the real work starts. So, yeah. You know, all the speculation and all the talk and all the opinions really don't matter much because now they've got them on the football field, and this is where people really earn their money.
No doubt about it. Lewis, when Kyler Murray got on the scale and weighed 207 pounds and then got measured and was 5'10 in an eighth, did you look at him and go, aha, Russell Wilson?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know how that is, man. I mean, people find comfort in comparables.
Yes.
And I know there were a lot of people who did do that, and scouts in particular find comfort in comparables because what it gives you then is it gives you a little bit more of a safety net. Had he come in under 5'10", had he come in under 200 pounds, then you don't have any safety net because you don't have any precedent. And when you don't have precedent, scouts they're not willing to go. They're not willing to put their you-know-what on the line. So, yeah, it made them more comfortable. Although, look, I mean, the difference between being 5'8 and 3/4 or 5'9 and a quarter as opposed to 5'10, is it really going to make that much of a difference?
But you know, you know, though, at some point in time, right, it is too small, and there is going
sure.
to be.
Oh no, there's no doubt. Right. There's no doubt. Look, if he's 5'6", 5'7", I'm sitting there going, "Oh, I mean, come on now. I mean, come on. That's probably not going to work."
Where is that point, Lewis? Right?
No, there is. There is. I just don't know if. I mean, I don't think that Kyler, given also what he showed, Ron, at Oklahoma behind a pro caliber. Look, all five of Oklahoma's offensive linemen that he played behind this year are going to play in the pros at some point.
Yeah.
All five of them. So it's not like he was playing against guys who I had blocking, for, like playing with guys like who I had blocking for me in high school, who I was taller than them all. It's not like that. I mean, he still had to find throwing lanes, go through progressions, move his feet, throw with different arm angles, the same way you see Drew do in the NFL, Drew Brees, the same way you see Russell do. We telestrated that during the draft, and I thought it was spectacular. I mean, I was sitting there going, hey, look, man, I can see why Cliff likes him. I can see why Steve is willing to trade away the 10th overall pick from a year ago for this guy. I can see why. Now, it just has to translate.
It
to
better work.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if it doesn't work, then they're going to go back to what you just said. He was too small. This was stupid. This was never going to work. And you don't want that to happen, obviously.
Louis Riddick, it's pretty cool what he's going to be able to do this year. Is every year ESPN has Monday Night Football doubleheader to start the season. Texans are at the Saints as the first game. And then Louis is going to be one of the color analysts with Brian Greasy coming up for the second game with Denver at Oakland as your Monday Night Football season opener, which is September 9th. It's really not that far away. Louis, I started this conversation with you by saying I do believe, and I'm not sucking up, you will be a general manager someday in the NFL. If you were one right now, would you run to the phone to call Steve Keim about Patrick Peterson? Would you do whatever you could to trade for Patrick Peterson? Or would you ignore Steve Keim when he called you right now about Patrick Peterson?
I would definitely give a call, especially if I was a team that was in need of a guy who can play the kind of, as Deion Sanders used to say back in the day when I played with him in Atlanta, who can play cat covers like Pat Peterson can, meaning I got that cat, you other 10 guys just worry about what you need to worry about, and I'll handle this over here. If I needed that guy, and I thought that guy would make a big difference, which, look, he can make a difference for any football team, yeah, I would be calling. If it was something that I felt like would come at a reasonable price, for sure. Patrick's special. He's a special, special player. There's no way that you would just not take Steve's call or not call him and say, is it possible that you're willing to deal him and what would it cost? And let's just keep the dialogue open for sure. For sure. I'm sure he's getting those kinds of calls. I don't know if he's made that kind of call in order to shop him. I can't say that. I wouldn't be trying to shop him. I'd be trying to make him happy.
Amen.
I'd be trying to sell him on the fact that we can turn this program around quick and you can stay here and you can still win. You don't want to lose homegrown superstars like that, man. You just don't. I mean, that's a bad look. That's a bad thing to have on your resume with one of your best players that this organization has ever had is now saying, man, I can't win here. I want out of here. You don't want that. You don't want that happening on your watch. And if I was Steve, I wouldn't want that happening to me.
I love how you phrased it, for a reasonable price. What would that price be? If you're now Steve Keim and not a GM of another team, what do you have to get back if you dare even consider trading Pat P?
Well, I mean, obviously, look, Pat's a perennial Pro Bowler and all pro, okay? He's also, let's see, I mean, what is Pat now? He is
28.
I'm sitting here trying to think off the top of my head. Yeah, he's 28. He'll be 29 in July, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting, I was just
very good, Lewis. Yes.
That's impressive. That's why you're a GM.
So I had just looked at his stuff the other day because I was watching him. You know, we were getting ready to talk about him on TV, and what would I want in return? Boy, I would probably want at least. I mean, he's still in his prime. You figure Pat probably has at least four good years, three or four good years. I'd want a two. Maybe even a one. I mean, it would depend on the market.
I would not be able to do it. I want a one, Lewis. I want a one.
I'm saying the market's finicky like that. And it would depend on, look, I mean, what I know of Pat Peterson, I'd want a one, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't know what Steve feels about Pat. You know, there's always personal things that come into it. And next thing you know, someone gives up a player for less than what you would have demanded for him. So I would say a one because he's in the prime of his career. And he's someone who can do special things that not other players can at a premium position. But who knows? But, yeah, I mean, a two obviously would be the absolute bottom barrel that you would take if the situation was just like, look, we just need to get him out of here because he really wants to go, and it wouldn't be – it'd just be best for our team. But, of course, you'd want a one of a guy for a guy of that caliber.
Listen, oh, I totally spaced what the question it was that I was going to. Oh yeah, Lewis. The
Mike shows you Mayock, how long Wolf played.
No, I thought you were going to ask him the question, Douglas. Mike Mayock Do you want to be Mike Mayock? Do you want to be Yock?
Well, here's the interesting thing, and this is not meant disrespectfully in any way. I like Mike. I've talked to Mike. I've talked to Mike about football. I know, you know, his upbringing, and I respect it. But I'm not Mike Mayock. I worked in an NFL front office for 12 years. Okay, so for me to go back to the league now, I know what the days are like. I know what the forming a scouting staff is like. I know what college scouts go through. I know what pro scouts go through. I know what interns go through. I know what it's like to meet with salary cap people. I know what it's like to constantly leave your house when it's dark, come home when it's dark, not see your family, miss kid functions. I know what that's all like. I know what it's like to live and die by every play of a football game. I just happened to transition into television because I couldn't find the kind of spot that I wanted to when I left Philadelphia. This isn't one of these where I'm coming in, like, with all due respect, who I love, Matt Millen. I wouldn't be coming in like that. I wouldn't be coming in like John Lynch. I have experiences that these guys have never had.
Right.
So when people say that, I the first thing I say is, look, with all due respect, I'm not Mike, I'm not John, I'm not Matt. So would I want to go back and be a GM in the right situation? Absolutely. Of course. There's people who I talk to all the time who go, hey, man, if you ever get the shot, I said, you already know. I already know the people who I'd want to work with. I already have a plan with how I would want to do things, of course. But I'm not – I'm going to lie if I say I don't stress over it, because sometimes I do, especially at the end of football seasons and then after the drafts. Of course you think about it and keep track of what's going on. But I've got a great job, man. ESPN has taken care of me better than I could have ever dreamed. I mean, I'm good. Trust me. I'm good. We have no problem.
Yes, you are, big guy.
As far as paying our mortgage, we have no problem. So, I mean, but.
And you don't have the stress, right?
You know, the grass is the grass, man, and nothing replaces it. Nothing.
Can you smell it?
That's right. Nothing replaces the locker room. Nothing replaces that sound of the crowd when the team comes out of the tunnel before kickoff.
Yep.
That is something, I don't care what you do, you can never replace, and I miss it.
Dude,
you are awesome.
Sorry to lay you on the psychological couch and get to know you and make you open up that way, but that was fantastic, Lewis. Best of luck, and please don't get mad when we try to bug ESPN to have you on more often. Loved it.
Absolutely. I'll come on anytime. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thanks, guys. There's Lewis Riddick joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti, the place to go for your next new or pre-owned car. Coming up next, Monty Williams. Is he the right man for the Suns job? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Monty Williams could not. I mean, you cannot handle the question better than he did. And I may or may not be admitting to talking to some people behind the scenes who told me it wasn't a case where they came to him and said, let's talk about the Robert Sarver question so you're ready for it so we can help you script an answer. He told the story to some of them about how he felt about Robert Sarver. And then repeated the story to us when asked, why in the world did you come here and what assurances did you have to get from Robert Sarver? Why do you believe it's going to be different with you here than any other coach that Robert Sarver has fired early, discussed things with about pressures, maybe even, now nobody asked this, but maybe send a strange email to a coach that says, give me the five things you're going to do right now to turn this team around. And Monty Williams said, wait a minute.
In my conversations with Mr. Sarver, I saw someone who didn't duck the tough questions. We both had tough questions for each other. And in this day and age where people throw each other under the bus, make excuses, blame, I didn't see that. I saw a man who really wants to bring success to this city. And I mean that with all of my heart, or I wouldn't have come. James and I are a lot alike in that we just want to do the right things. And I saw that with Mr. Sarver.
That is amazing right there to listen to. The key phrase, or I wouldn't have come.
Mm-hmm.
He said that. He said that with even more conviction, at least it felt that way,
yeah,
than anything else he said.
And then
he said a lot of great stuff.
He admitted to both of them admitting mistakes together.
For him to take ownership of his past was huge for me because I had to do the same thing. He had tough questions for me. And if you look at my past, I've done some things, said some things in the media that I wish I could have taken back. And so that's what I saw. I saw a man who's passionate, a man who cares about the city. In our conversations, I just felt that. I felt like he really wants to bring something to the city that's pretty cool, and I wanted to be a part of that.
Man, where do we start on this one, Basin Earnings? Where do we start? How about a general observation right now, based on everything that I heard him say? This is the right guy at the right time to build relationships with young guns and change the arc of the entire franchise. That's what I was thinking as I was listening to him. Now, I am an optimist. There's no, I am a positive person, ladies and gentlemen. But it's the combination of the young players with this man, this teacher that is walking in and who, by the way, has an awful lot of floor cred and will be able to walk up to somebody as well, challenge them, but do it in a very millennial kind of way, so to speak. I think he's going to have an awesome impact on the people that play for him. And the better players that he can actually cultivate, the more wins the Suns are going to have.
You know, there's something he said yesterday, Wolf, that wasn't about the players, but it's exactly what made me think about the players. When he was asked about this job and getting this opportunity, when you had so many other opportunities, I mean, there's so many teams that wanted you, why this? And he said something that he totally meant for himself, but I thought about those players. Because do you ever get the feeling while you were watching the young guys for the Suns, they've started to take for granted they're in the NBA? They've started to feel like, I deserve playing time because everybody says the young guys have to go out there and learn. But they're not really earning the playing time. And I think you could argue some people, not all, but some people on the Suns started to take for granted they're in the NBA. And yet when Monty Williams was asked about this job, he said, wait a minute.
It's an NBA job. And I hope I've never lost sight of the fact that I'm in the NBA. As a kid, that's all I wanted, was to be in the league. And I think this is, 25, 26 years for me in the NBA, and I just don't take that for granted. As I said, these jobs are hard to come by.
They are hard to come by. There's no doubt about that. But for me, again, Monty, just listening to Monty, the number one takeaway I had was how he coaches guys. The fact that he said that his style is based on servanthood. He also said he understood the difference between telling someone the truth and embarrassing them.
As I've evolved as a coach, I understand the difference between telling someone the truth and embarrassing them. And that was one of my flaws in New Orleans. My truth-telling at times could embarrass players, and that was something that I had to deal with. And I spent a lot of time talking to former players, and they would always say, Coach, I love playing for you, but. And the but was something that I had to work on. And I shamefully admit to you that I wasn't happy with that. And so I've had 4 years and a lot of experiences, and I've talked to a lot of people, and hopefully I've improved in that area.
Man. If you're a boss, how often have you talked to former employees and seriously meant it when you said, what could I have done to handle the situation better?
Yes, right.
That's what he hinted at.
Yes.
He hinted that he's talked to former players, and they said, I love playing for you, but, and he listened to the but. Are you willing, this is going to sound funny, are you willing to listen to the but?
No. No. I am not willing to listen to the but.
Not a lot of people are.
Gentlemen.
I admit, you know, for me, it depends on who's it coming from.
At some point in time, what do I have left in this show right here? I have an hour and a half. Do I not? I have an hour and a half, ladies and gentlemen. At some point in time, it's time for a digital download.
Oh, it really is.
No. I've got a riff on something.
We'll move on. The Phoenix Convention Center will once again host more than 75 of the Southwest's best craft brewers with over 350 craft beers, and we're giving you the chance to win tickets Bear, I'd like to do a riff on this beer. Just visit the rewards page at ArizonaSports.com to enter and for complete details on the real Wild and Woody Indoor Beer Festival on July 27th. Hooray, beer. Coming up next, should Steve Keim be calling teams on Patrick Peterson? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Louis Riddick. Sometimes you say the phrase former general manager. Louis Riddick, someday general manager of an NFL team. ESPN NFL Insider was just on the Doug and Wolf show a little while ago. And as we bring up this topic, full disclosure, any single time I've ever talked to somebody with the Cardinals, and Paul, I don't know if you back this up, on the record and off the record or on the record, they basically ignore the question about trading Patrick Peterson and then say, listen, we're not trading Patrick Peterson. Off the record, they barely talk about it, and they always end by saying, but listen, why are you asking? You know I'm not going to do that. You know we're not going to do that. You know he's not, you know, blah, blah, blah. Patrick Peterson is always a no, no, no when the topic of trade comes up.
The moment you trade Patrick Peterson, you turn into the Oakland Raiders after trading Khalil Mack. You're looking for the guy you just traded.
That's a great comparison.
The Raiders just plummeted to 13. Count them. 13 sacks as a team last year. That was Chandler Jones for the Cardinals. And you trade Patrick Peterson, the moment that happens, you're like, man, where do we get a lockdown number one cover corner who we can go ahead and start the game plan with when we play Cincinnati and we put him on A.J. Green and we play the Falcons in the first six games and Julio Jones. Guess what? We're all going to find out just how much we're going to miss Patrick Peterson in the first month and a half when he's not out there. There was a moment last season, I forget which game it was midseason, he got dinged up and he was on the sideline for all of about two series. And it was virtual chaos on the Cardinals' defense. So, wait a minute. Who's going with the number one receiver? Now, you're going to have all week to game plan. You're going to have 3 months to game plan for not having Patrick Peterson. But when he wasn't out on that field for the first time in his career, it was jarring.
To me, I'm sorry, Douglas, honestly, but to me, I'm just looking at it right now. So many people don't understand how critical it is and how simple it is to say you got that guy and you're going to expunge him the entire game for the most part. You can take him out of the game plan. Otherwise, you've got a scheme to stop players.
You heard Louis Riddick say your famous line that you've said before. He played with Deion Sanders. And Deion said, I got cat coverage.
Yeah, cat coverage. Yes, I did hear that.
I got this cat.
It's so easy to say that, right? It's so easy. Otherwise, you've got to scheme defensively. You've got to warn all these players. It takes more than one guy to cover an A.J. Green, right?
There's another aspect to this, though, and that is that the personal side of, does Steve Keim want that associated with his resume?
You don't want to lose homegrown superstars like that, man. You just don't. I mean, that's a bad look. That's a bad thing to have on your resume with one of your best players that this organization has ever had is now saying, man, I can't win here. I want out of here. You don't want that. You don't want that happening on your watch. And if I was Steve, I wouldn't want that happening to me.
Yet, and there is a yet here, not a but a yet. You are dealing with a guy that's a year and a half away from the age-old line of demarcation that Tom Brady's exploding through of 30 years old, who will then, coming up in the 2020 season, will be in the last year of his contract, coming off of a year where he only plays 10 games. Do you keep him forever? And just by franchising him, you say, you know what, we'll franchise you until you fall apart? Do you actually, because if you're not going to, are you really going to sign him to a contract extension this coming offseason when he probably doesn't get voted captain and he only plays 10 games? I mean, this is a real business decision here.
You're absolutely right. And if the Cardinals start 2-4, God forbid 1-5, then they might seriously consider it. They might not ever put Patrick Peterson on the field again. It is possible. I'm not saying it's plausible, but if they start 1-5, 2-4, and they realize, oh boy, we got a lot longer way to go, and our rookie quarterback, it's going to take him the entire year to navigate this learning curve.
And guess what? If I add to your point, Byron Murphy does well.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And so if some of these things happen, it's not an absolute they stick with Patrick Peterson. I think it's remote, the chance they trade him, but it would be out there.
The way you're going to proceed on this, I think if you're Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals, is you're not going to make phone calls. You'll take phone calls, but you're not going to make them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You'll sit there and you'll listen. Of course, you're going to take phone calls on Pat P. You'll do that all day long, but you're not going to make the phone calls on Patrick Peterson.
I think
that's the line of demarcation.
This is Lewis Riddick on that.
He's a special, special player. There's no way that you would just not take Steve's call or not call him and say, is it possible that you're willing to deal him and what would it cost? And let's just keep the dialogue open for sure. For sure.
Just think about that. We all speculate on that, but this is a guy who's worked for 12 years in NFL front offices, who wants to be an NFL general manager, who said there's no way you wouldn't have called Steve Keim if you're a general manager and just said, let's keep an open dialogue. What are we looking at here?
I mean, if you're an AFC team, you're the Chiefs, and the Cardinals start 2-4, you start lighting up Steve Keim's phone. If you're the Chargers and you think you're a cover corner away because you have pass rushers for the LA Chargers and you think you're a pretty stout team and you're willing to give up a one, which is going to be a lower first round because you're a solid team like the Chiefs or Chargers, maybe Steve Keim seriously considers that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know that when Patrick comes back, he'll have 10 games, of course, left to play. And with a team like a Kansas City Chiefs, boy, that might be worth it. 10 games and the other season. He's got another season left on that contract right there at what I think is a very manageable number for him. I could see it happening to a Kansas City Chiefs type team, but I will tell you right now, I don't think it's going to happen overall. I just don't.
I can tell you, not that this matters, but I've done two different interviews in the Kansas City market because Kansas City stations want to talk about getting Patrick Peterson. The fan base is going crazy about getting Patrick Peterson, and now they have Tyrann Mathieu. So now you've already got the Honey Badger there as well. And I'm sure Honey Badger doesn't mind fueling that flame a little bit either.
That was like pouring gasoline, metaphorically speaking, on the fire.
Well, once upon a time, Pete Twice brought Tyrann Mathieu to the desert. Now maybe Tyrann Mathieu returns the favor and brings Pete Twice to Kansas City late in his career.
I could see that happening.
By the way, did you hear the horrible story on Tyrann Mathieu?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. A family member.
It's like a distant relative. I don't know, some sort of second cousin.
Yeah, a distant relative threatened Tyrann Mathieu by exposing made-up sexual problems and attacks and assaults and said, if you don't give me X amount of dollars coming up, you know, soon, I'm going to call TMZ. Then Badger blocked his phone so that guy can't bother him anymore. And then that guy used a different phone and then said, if I don't get something like $3.5 million by Friday, I'm calling TMZ right now. And Badger just turned it over to the authorities. Guy got arrested. Thank goodness. But that's that kid. I mean, and again, another one of the amazing stories is when you listen to that kid, learn from that guy about all he's been through in his life. It's amazing the way he's turned out.
And remember how the Badger got his life in order? He went and lived with Patrick Peterson's parents in Florida once he got kicked off the LSU team. That's where he really changed his life around.
What a dude.
Love the Badger.
Join Burns and Gamble coming up Friday. Chandler Harley as they kick off the Memorial Weekend Freedom event for your chance to get exclusive deals courtesy of Chandler Harley Davidson. Plus, we will be giving you the chance to win D-backs and Phoenix Rising tickets while on site. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for complete details. Coming up next, the general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen. The question is simple. Why is 2019 May going to be different than 2018 May? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf Mornings on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks Baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business cares about you because your business isn't small to them. Visit coxbusiness.com today.
General Manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen, has just called in to the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line every Wednesday at 8:45. We talk D-backs baseball, and today, just shy of the game, as first pitch is coming up this morning at 12:40 from San Diego. That'll be on ESPN 620 AM. Mike, good morning. I used to have no problems with the month of May. Suddenly, the last 2 years, I hate May. I admit it openly now. What's it like being a general manager now? Because you know how fans are. We're going crazy at what's wrong. What are you guys doing on the inside? How do you wear it, and how do you fix it?
Good morning. I hate May too. I'm with you. This is becoming a bad month for us. It's a good question. We just rest assured that we're reacting, I think, appropriately given the circumstances, but share a lot of the frustration that I think you guys would express as well as the fans, that we're watching the same things. It has been frustrating. These last three games were winnable, very winnable, and we didn't win them. And we need to start figuring out a way to do that. And I would agree that, you know, the offense is where has carried us for the first part of the season in a lot of cases. But, you know, I think since the middle of April, we've held our opponent to three runs or less 20 times, and we're 17-15 in those games. And that's not a good recipe, you know, long-term. Those games should be winnable. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so we need to make some adjustments on that. How to fix it? We talked too about how we could round out the edges and the guys that are performing in AAA, and how do you fit some of those performances onto your team? My argument is, you know, 1-7 in our lineup, or innings 1-7 against starting pitching, is where these games are being lost in a lot of cases. Mm. That we need to get the main cogs in our lineup going on a more regular basis in order to fix it. And that's a frustrating thing to talk about, because, you know, in baseball, unfortunately, over the 162, it's about guys are going to go through their ebbs and flows, and we've hit a flow sort of or the ebb sort of together in some cases, and getting those guys all hitting back again is what it's going to take, in my opinion.
You know, Mike, when I hear you talking about that, of course, your major cogs in your lineup, I think immediately of David Peralta. How is David Peralta's health?
We're not anticipating it being a significant thing. You know, he dove the other day in the game. I think it was Saturday night. And he's, you know, I don't think he sat out that one game shortly thereafter. And then I just think it kind of tightened up on him a little bit last night. So we'll see how he is today. It's tough to get a read right after the game last night. So we'll see how he comes in today. We're hoping it's not a long-term thing. You know, if it is something that's a little more significant, then we'll have to make that adjustment on the roster that way. But we're not anticipating that right now.
I have no idea what it's like to be a GM, and no one's ever going to ask me to be one. But how do you tell the difference between you're a good team struggling and you're really not that good and you need to make changes?
Time. My opinion.
Yeah.
Time. You know, I think baseball is something that's borne out over a long period of time. That's why I think it's it's safe in a lot of ways that, you know, there's not a lot of activity in the first couple of months, because I think your immediate reaction is to make changes. I don't think that's always the wisest move in baseball. I think that, you know, we let's go back to last year's team. You brought up last year's team, or last year's May, and I agree. It was worse last year. We were scoring zero runs a game, and then we went out into June, and we led all of Major League Baseball in offense for the month of June. If we had gone out and made a ton of changes other than going and acquiring John Jay, you know, you wouldn't have seen that in June. And obviously the end of the story didn't write itself the way we hoped it would, but just at least specifically referencing that aspect of it, this team offensively early on has shown better than last year's team. So to jump off in the other direction after 3 one-run losses, I'm not going to make rash decisions based on that. However, as time moves on and the Dodgers are 15 games over 500 and there's other teams in the wild card that are moving in a different direction, yeah, we need to get going.
Mike, just watching Luke Weaver right now, is he just scratching the potential of his talent, or is this a guy you expect even more from?
I hope so. You know, when we acquired him, he came with a couple of different things that we liked. One, and I think you saw this on that play he made on the line, the athleticism.
Yes.
You know, Greinke walked by after that, and we asked him, "Hey, could you have made that play?" And he's like, "I don't think I could have jumped and made that play."
Wow.
So that was. But I do think he could have made that play. He's a pretty good athlete himself. I think that athleticism, the strike throwing ability, and then really the track of performance that he had had prior to, you know, really the end of last year was all pretty solid for a guy all the way through his minor league career. And, you know, I think he's seen a continuation of that. Where the hope is that he, you know, young players go through the ups and downs. We have some young players right now that are going through it. And it's hard to see the other side coming out on the other side sometimes when you're going through it. That experience, that struggle is valuable for young players to figure out, make adjustments to ultimately become better or more than what they are right now, because that's where you learn the most. You know, you don't learn when you're on top of the mountain. You learn when you're getting beat up a little bit and figuring out, okay, next time I get into this situation, I need to do this differently or make these types of adjustments behind the scenes or when I'm out on the mound. Mm-hmm. And I think he's started to do some of that.
This is a question I'm admitting, Mike, I'm asking out of ignorance because I'm not in Reno. I don't know how Yasmani Tomas's defense is. I don't know anything about Tomas and his work ethic anymore or what he's like in the clubhouse. But I ask anyway, only by watching highlights. Has he done enough to earn a call up to the parent club?
He is tearing the cover off the ball, clearly, just from a makeup standpoint that you asked. The guy, he's a stud. He's a great kid. He's the best. I think the challenge for us is, you know, if people are still healthy, it's a challenge getting him onto our team on our field right now. If David, Adam, and Walker, who a week ago we were all talking about as, you know, what we were, where do you play him on an everyday basis? And I think, could you call him up as a pinch hitter? Of course you could. I don't think a lot of these games are coming down to a pinch hit. I think a lot of them are coming down to, like we talked about at the very beginning, you know, we need to put more offensive pressure innings 1-7 on the opposing starting pitcher. So I think that's a little bit of a conundrum. Yes, we could. Could we fit him on the roster? Of course we could, in a lot of ways. It's just, you know, what's the position you're going to replace there to get him onto the field? Having him on the roster and not playing him, you're in the same box you're in right now. You know, if you had a spot to play him, that'd be a different conversation.
Does having a series coming up, it's still in a little while, in Toronto affect your decision at all as it relates to Tomas?
Yeah, it could. You know, we talked about it when we went to Tampa, about how we were going to use the designated hitter. Some cases you like to spray the designated hitter around to give guys days off, put your everyday guys on the bench for a day, but still Jones, Peralta, others to give them that day off, but not give them the day off. But, you know, we didn't really swing the bat very well in Tampa, so maybe we would do something a little bit different this time.
So, Mike, talk a little bit about the rotation, how you see the rotation, the status of the rotation, and how Zach Godley fits in that.
Yeah, I think Zach's going to be in the bullpen. You know, I think long-term, the best outcome for us would be that Zach reasserts himself into the rotation. But that's not happening today. So we're going to make an adjustment coming up here after the off day, depending on how things shake out today, and then going into the off day, what the rotation will look like. I think by and large, the rotation has done a really good job. They have kept us in games every night. In fact, in the last couple of weeks, they've done even better than that. You know, we've always relied on our starting pitching to sort of set a tone and a base for what we're doing, and they've done that. So we feel pretty good about it. We need to figure out that fifth spot.
You still got a little while, but the first Monday in June is the draft. What's the number one thing a player has to show to be a Diamondback draft pick?
Well, talent's number one.
Okay. I guess I could have avoided the Bobby Knight there. That was good. That was good.
I don't know that there's, I mean, certainly, you know, character, makeup, athleticism, a lot of those things are sort of pieces underneath that. But we're going to be looking for the best player that we can. We need to continue to build the base of a talent within our organization. I think you see some of these teams that are running away with divisions. I think you see some of these teams that are perennially in the World Series. I think you see their lineup and the impact players up and down. I think we need to continue to build to that long term.
Mike, you're good at your job. Thank you once again for joining us. Really appreciate it. God bless you. We'll talk to you
guys.
See you, Mike. There's Mike Hazen joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti, the place to go for your next new or pre-owned car. Diamondbacks again coming up 12:40 today against San Diego. Eric Lauer is on the hill for the Padres. His whip in his lifetime against the Diamondbacks is a 1.64, and his opponent batting average, meaning when the Diamondbacks face him, they bat 3.44 against him.
I see.
Let's make sure we're not the first team to get swept at Petco, other than the Padres.
We've got a chance.
Coming up next, did we just get our first piece of concrete evidence that Robert Sarver has changed? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.